The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
AI is coming to finance with some major shifts to the investment landscape. We have what we're calling sumo politics. And we're seeking out innovation with our guest today, Steve Sanders, Executive VP of Interactive Brokers. All this and much more on episode number 925 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, summer's upon us. The longest day of the year is just days off. Plenty of heat with the weather and this market and all the ridiculousness of the news these days. It's been pretty funny, actually, if you didn't take it too seriously, that is. Now, before we get into this, I want to talk about some of the guests that we have lined up over the next few months, because we just got a boatload of excellent, top-rated guests like Meb Faber is coming up, Peter Schiff, Jim Rogers, Anthony Scaramucci, the Mooch, Larry McMillan, and a whole host of great economists from universities around the country, and some names that you're going to know about. Lots more coming. So it's going to be an exciting few months with tons, I promise you, tons of ideas, plenty of information, education, fun, and we are going to get down and dirty with understanding more about the markets and making you money, making you the money that you need to get to that point of financial security, independence, and on your way to that day when you could just kick back and not worry about money. What would that look like? I mean, just take a moment for a second and think about that. What would that look like? Not worrying about where the money is going to come from if you stop working. Of course, yes, there's Social Security and there's some pensions for some of you, but for many, there's really just a small amount of government assistance that's going to come when you're 65, 67, 70, whenever you start. And then you have to rely on the 401ks, the money that you saved. Maybe you get an inheritance, maybe you won't. But the fact of the matter is that you have to make the best of all of it, put it to work in the most intelligent manner. You know about that. I want to talk about something that I read this week. It was a piece that discussed who are the buyers of the market. We talked about this on DH Unplugged this past Tuesday. And I talked about it with John C. Dvorak. We do this every Tuesday night. It's a great discussion that we have every week. And we know that there was a definitive bid in the markets. In fact, when you see news that is to the positive of a stock or a sector, things get pretty crazy pretty quickly. And we know that with all of the movement down that we see during the day, there's a quick pop to the upside. Towards the end of the day, it really flowers even greater and blooms into a very nice ending. And we've seen this from the market bottom. There's the hope, the prayer that we get something done. We saw that last week, the discussion of, I guess we won, right? We got magnets out of the deal and we're keeping 55% tariffs on China with, you know, the variety of the fentanyl tariffs and the import tariffs and all that equals 55%, where they're only going to tariff us 10%, and supposedly a deal got done and a framework got done and Lutnick's all happy with the thumbs up and Bessent is all happy and President Trump, everybody's happy. Markets are questioning exactly what we really got out of this deal. But this bid that we've seen, it appears to be coming from Asia, Asian investors that are snapping up shares of U.S. stock. In particular, there was this massive buy and flow into the U.S. on those down days back in April. So the analysis that was done when we looked at this and we got the reports in, they're delayed. You can't get them right away. It shows that there was big money coming in from Asian retail investors. That was when that market was, remember that haywire, 1,000 point here, 1,500 points there, you know, 4 or 5% on the NASDAQ. it seems that there was massive demand from foreign investors who apparently have decided that they've seen this story before. Buying the dip with both hands, both feet. And you can tell. You can, as it's happening, you could see it. We've talked about this, that the foreign money was coming in, whether it was from retail or whether it was from foreign governments through their sovereign wealth funds, whether it was from hedge funds that are non-dollar denominated, trading in their various currencies for the U.S. dollar. And that's why the U.S. dollar was moving up. The relationship between currencies and stocks, when the yen is moving lower against the U.S. dollar, then money is probably moving into the U.S. And more often than not, you'll see that stocks are going to go up in the U.S. Japan stocks love the fact that the yen is going lower, so they're going up too. So this cross-market relationship that has been in place for a long time is actually playing out pretty consistently. The timing of the moves is also a tell. Often you'll see this move that coincides with the opening or closing of, let's say, the European markets. And you'll see how markets react. And traders are essentially moving their focus from trading that market when it closes to, okay, where else can I get my fix, right? Where else can I start moving money into so I can continue trading? Whether it is individual traders or, in fact, algorithms that are really working the system in a good way. I don't mean that negatively. I don't mean that in a way that's, you know, oh, it's rigged. No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about what they are meant to do. The machines are investing. Traders are looking at the automation that happens, and as things are moving up, they're buying in. And they're able to, in fact, keep their eye, the machines that is, the algorithms, keeping their eye on multiple markets at a time, multiple exchanges, multiple investments, whether it is equities, futures, commodities, currencies, cryptocurrencies, whatever it is. They're able to manage this cross-market and this cross-exchange relationship in a much better way than a trader or a prop trader or a trading desk is able to do. But once an exchange trades, when a exchange trading closes, let's say, then they're going to try to find another place to fulfill that need. And that's why we see the pops at or drops at 4 a.m. in the morning, 5 a.m. in the morning, U.S. time, Eastern time, when the European markets come to, you know, an opening. And then 11 o'clock or so in the afternoon, 1 o'clock, depending on what's closing and opening, you see these kind of moves happening. Now, nonetheless, markets we know have been very resilient. I mean, even in the face of this sumo match, right? The, I guess, sumo match of the century, where these two heavyweights, we got Trump and Musk in this lover's spat. Very weird, the whole thing, by the way. And the escalation and what I found to be the embarrassment, the threats, the resulting market moves. Tesla at one point was down over $150 billion for it was just a few days before when this whole thing started a couple of weeks back. Hardly mature of either party. Poor taste. Bullying. If there was ever a good use for that term, it's there. So I think that it appears we're kind of past that. Whether or not it was real or it was engineered for some reason or another, I can't tell you. What I can tell you is that, again, markets have been very resilient. You saw the V move on Tesla. Down, what, 16, 17, 18%? Still down on the year, but then flying higher on just a little bit of news of robotaxi seen in Austin, Texas last week. One driverless vehicle seen on the roads in Austin, Texas. I guess the fact is it's real. And now everybody is catching up with the reality of that, what has been talked about for years, that was something right around the corner that took decades to get in place is actually maybe happening. And how that will benefit Tesla in the future. And I see that. But at the same time, the idea that Elon is back at work at Tesla rather than at Doge and neglecting his companies, I think is something that is a good thing. Now, whether or not it can overcome the fact that cars are not being sold is something else entirely. What else? Well, we did see the nice numbers on CPI last week, and that was interesting that we really are not seeing any, I would say this, there's really no alert or concern about inflation right now. And there's some talk about the fact that the May numbers are the last time we're going to see that level, when in fact the tariff numbers are going to start to kick in. Now, again, the tariff numbers are a small piece of the overall GDP of the United States, but yet at the same time, it's going to hit different, well, we'll say, it's not sectors, it's different goods differently. Now, maybe we have something like electronics that are coming in from China or from Vietnam that may be a higher level of cost factor, whereas maybe foods, not so much. Maybe even though we get some from other places, there's a lot of farming that goes on just here in the United States, and that is not going to see a big impact. And maybe some of the margins will be affected by this. But again, it was dropped. It was held off. There was pull forward. All these things went into play. And I do think long-term, unequivocally, that tariffs are in fact inflationary. The question is, are we going to readily just take them off? And how fast are companies able to reposition? Again, the bark is worse than the bite. We have seen time and time again that this administration is caving in to what they wanted. It was a gigantic change in the dynamic of the global economics to where we are today, which is just sufficing to, well, we got magnets and we'll keep everything as it is. Otherwise, we're happy. Rare earth materials come in from China. And even though they can't do anything about fentanyl, fine. Okay, fine. Let's just do a deal and just call it a day. That's what's going on. That's what really has just happened right before our very eyes. We're going to keep a close watch on all of that, of course. Let's get to the section that we call our guest section, which is with Steve Sanders. He's the EVP, Executive Vice President of Marketing and Product Development at Interactive Brokers. And he oversees all the marketing and the product development, which is really the main issue here, of the company. And he's introduced the low commissions to Interactive Brokers, advanced trading technology, and all the products worldwide to advanced individual and institutional investors. He's been there since 2001, and he established the company's platform for financial advisors. Thank you very much. And he's also been responsible for many key initiatives, including the building of a direct digital marketing program, developing new account structures. He's been there 20 years plus, and bringing a lot of products and tools that we're going to talk about, because I want to know all about the new initiatives they have with regard to education and what advisors are doing as well. So let's get right to our discussion with Steve Sanders. So Steve Sanders, it's always great to have you on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Thanks so much for coming on today.
It's great to be with you, Andrew.
You know, we always talk about the advanced technology. Cutting edge is an understatement when it comes to Interactive Brokers. But I kind of want to go around in a couple different areas here, and because there's been a bit of a shift in the investment landscape. And I'm assuming that that you are obviously getting a lot of it, because we talked about the zero-dated options. We talked about, you know, the fast trading, the speculative trading. I mean, that's a lot of things that obviously brokerages and custodians and places like Interactive Brokers benefit from. One of the big things that I'm wondering about is, are you starting to see, or what are you seeing at all in the area of AI, artificial intelligence, when it comes to finance trading, usage, things that are being built? Because I know you have some great tools. So what's happening there?
So AI is really something, you know, we look into for all areas. We look into it, you know, for such things as customer service. We look into it for such things as marketing, how to acquire more clients. And of course, we look into it for trading. So we offer a couple of third-party platforms that clients can pay for, and they can go in there. One of them is just for plain analysis. It looks for opportunities. The other is actually a trading model type of platform whereby it takes in the inputs and it actually makes trades. So it's been out there for, I would say, the last year or so.
Is this like let me just interrupt, though, because I want to ask a question. Is this like the next gyration or of algorithms? Is that all this is, or is it something different?
It you know, it depends on the end user. It's like algos or anything else. I mean, you know, they're tools that people can use. Some people find success with them and others don't find success with them. You know, this has been going on for many years.
Yeah.
You know, unfortunately, those who do find success with it aren't talking about it because they don't want to tell, you know, 200 of their best friends, you know, who will come into the market and take away their profits. So
right.
This isn't something that, you know, traders, you know, this has always been the case. When you have successes, you don't really share it with people.
Right. That's the old adage of if you're teaching it, it's because you failed at what you were doing, you know, versus if you, right. If you're telling us all the reasons on how to do this, why aren't you just doing it yourself and making all the money? There's some truth, but there's also some. I mean, some people like to teach, and that's what they do. So
absolutely,
but you know, you can't. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely. There's nothing wrong with that. What I'm saying is, there aren't, you know, 30 people calling me up and talking about their AI successes.
Right. Yeah. And trying to say, hey, will you look at this and see if this is something that what do you think of it? Nobody wants to share the secret sauce.
Nobody wants to share the secret sauce.
And
tell you how successful it is, but I can't tell you that people are playing with it.
Yeah. I would think the first in on AI, to a degree, if it could be very quick trades and certain like scalps and things of that nature, could be very successful. I would argue that possibly down the road, a lot of them come online that is going to be fighting with each other, like we see with algos, and it becomes
that's exactly right. The first people in with something new, they tend to make the profits, and then when everybody else comes in, it disappears.
Yep. Now, when we're talking about this, and this is something that's a differentiator for some advisors, but what advice would you give to advisors that are looking to, in this whole, you know, this tech-driven market, what can they do and what should they be aware of? Because I'll tell you, I was recently actually asked to, it was a kind of a spotlight on webinar for advisors that Interactive Brokers put on, and I brought one piece of information to that, two tools, but a big part of what we do with the platform. And I would think that a challenge you have, because there's so many different things that are happening on a daily basis, is to, I don't want to say educate, but even make awareness. How about that? Awareness of things. How do you, what advice would you give advisors that are trying to differentiate themselves in all this tech that's out there?
Wow. That's easy. Most people don't like to spend time reading or poring over documentation or anything else because, you know, I think it's human nature, you know, to see something and you just dive in and do mm-hmm. it. You don't want to waste your time doing the homework. RIBKR Campus has all kinds of courses and everything from products to our technology. And if you just go in there and, you know, spend a bit of time taking the courses, reading the documentation, and I'm not saying you should spend 60 hours a week, but maybe if you devote 5 hours a week to partaking of this, it will make you a better trader if you do that homework.
So you want people to actually do something for themselves?
Yeah, actually go out and do the hard work of investigating, learning.
Yeah, Stephen Covey. You know Stephen Covey.
A lot of people, they don't want to do that, right?
I agree. You get in a groove and you're just happy with what you're doing and don't shake the boat. Stephen Covey, in his book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, he has a chapter, it's called Sharpening the Saw. And the whole idea is that, you know, you have this saw that is your tool. That is the thing that you use all the time. That is your business. And for those that don't want to take that moment and sharpen it every once in a while to make sure that their tools that they use are the best and are tweaked for their finest. Otherwise, you're going to sit there and try to chop down a tree. It's going to take you five times as long. Sharpening the saw is the equivalent of us advisors spending a little time refreshing, learning, reading the instruction manual, right?
Right. That's exactly right. I mean, the easiest path is to listen to all your friends telling you that they're trading GameStop and making lots of money, mm-hmm. and maybe your timing will be good, and maybe it will be really, really bad. So that would be the route I would go. But anyway.
So you've talked about in your past, you've gave some other discussions and writings about the homogenization of brokerage services. And I'm kind of curious how Interactive Brokers continues to stand out in such a competitive landscape. I mean, it's got to be I'm just thinking a fly on the wall in some of those meetings is like, because there's a lot of stuff coming out all the time by everybody else. And it's like, you want to stay not necessarily ahead for just the sake of it, but you want to stay, you know, at the forefront.
Right. So, you know, what's distinguished this firm for me and going close to 25 years, is that the people who work here, you know, they were actually involved in the market making business, and all of them are intellectually curious. So they're out there trying to find out what the latest is, maybe if there's an exchange we're missing, maybe if there's a better way of clearing. But I think if you want to be on the cutting edge, you have to be intellectually curious and always wanting to push the envelope forward. You know, our forecast contracts are an example of something brand new and different. And, you know, we were intellectually curious about it and, you know, we introduced it. So I think it's our culture of wanting to do that, of being intellectually curious and always wanting to provide whatever the newest and latest is the secret to our success.
I want to go back to the predictive markets in a second. I want to ask you though, because when I read the latest earnings and I saw the numbers coming out with the DARTs, which by the way, DARTs is the
daily average revenue trades.
Yeah, that's the important thing in this business. Other businesses may have something like like Meta may have how many daily active users or right. You know, eyeballs or paying this or whatever. Anyway, in this business, when it comes to trading, DARTs are important. But what's fascinating is, tell me if I'm wrong about this, but there was like a 63% higher daily average revenue trades than in the latest reading. Is that right?
Yes, that was not for the month of May. I believe that was for the month of April.
Yeah, I don't think May was out. Well, maybe. Yeah.
May did come out yesterday, and I don't remember, you know, the figures offhand. That certainly year over year, we did have very nice growth once again in May, and maybe a little bit down from April because April was a very good month for us. But yes. But keep in mind that this activity, right? You know, it's driven by two things. You know, one is volatility in the markets, and the other is seasonality. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the way we run our business, we go out there and we bring in a steady stream of new clients coming into the business. And when there's more volatility, it will peak up, or if it's the right season, and when there's less, it will come down, but there's always steady upward growth.
But it's unbelievable. I mean, 63% higher, that's not a small number.
No, it's not a small
number. It's not like it was on a low base. It wasn't on a low base to begin with.
Right, exactly.
Now, are you including in there the predictive markets?
The predictive markets are yes, they're in there. That's part of all the.
So that could be some of the newer stuff. That could be some of the increase because that's a new item.
Yes, it is absolutely a new item. Hmm. We don't break it out separately.
And how, on the last on this piece here that I want to kind of cover, I think the last time we talked, we also talked about the incredible increase in options, generally speaking, the general use of options. And then the 0 day was a big thing, but that was also something that your firm does a lot of, right? You do a lot of work in the options area. Is that continuing as it has been?
Yes, it is. And as you know, we started our life as an options market maker, so it is in our blood. I think, you know, not only in the U.S., but there's been tremendous growth in Europe and Asia and interest in these products as well as futures.
Yeah, I mean, because one of the things that has always been a concern is how much added volatility, if this is a case, do options present. One of the things that I had a problem with was a trade done by a massive hedge fund years ago where they did way out of the money call. We talked about this, you and I, way out of the money calls. And then that just ratcheted the whole market up, right? Because you had to cover the or hedge the long side on that. And the more the out of the money calls were being bought, that was happening, that the continue. It was like a vicious cycle, right? But zero day options don't have that, because when you say 0 day, by the way, these are created. These can be one of two, right? They can be created a long time ago, but just happen to be expiring in a day or so.
That's right.
Or weeklies. Or weeklies that are expiring, right? And zero days. I mean, do you think 0 days are essentially? They don't have to be 0 days, right? They could be 2 days. I mean, it's kind of like close to the end options. Is that?
Yeah, that works? That's a very true statement. The reason why certain people like them is because of the volatility. And certainly as you get closer to expiration date, the volatility increases. So people generally like them on the last day. But I would say on a Thursday or a Wednesday, there's certainly more volatility than there would be, you know, maybe when the option was first issued.
Right. Let's go back to the prediction markets, because the prediction markets are, I don't want to call them an adjunct, but they have more similarity to options than not, in my opinion. At least that's my opinion. But they also have, because it's basically a binary outcome to a degree, right? You know, I guess it's yes or no. I mean, we know that. It's yes or no. Is it going to do this? Yes. Is not? No. And how are you seeing the demand for this? And two questions. How are you seeing the demand for this? And what are the most popular right now?
Okay. So obviously the most demand was for the presidential election, because lots of people had a view on that. Certainly our primary contracts are pretty popular. And you got those
presidentials in right on time.
Right on time.
They were like, what was it, 2 weeks or something like that? It was something really close.
No, it was more like a month.
Was it? But, oh, I remember like we were talking offline about it and it was coming. It was like, all right, when's it going to be here?
Tommy was right.
Yeah.
But right now I know you're down in Florida and you can go vote in your primary. And certainly there are contracts on that for Florida and New Jersey and Virginia, where there are big governor primaries coming up. Also, economics, CPI is always a popular one, as well as climate change.
Yeah, and where are you expanding to, if you may? Is that available to be talked about?
You know, we're going to continue on this route, you know, focusing on politics and economics and climate change, but we're trying to introduce it all around the world, given that we have clients in over 200 countries and territories around the world.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, these are available in Europe, I know, in a variety of countries there, like Liechtenstein.
We started, you know, obviously we have...
Where is Liechtenstein? Seriously, where is that? Somewhere in that?
Been there, but I if you asked me to point it out on a map, I'd have to look hard. But anyway, we need to go in country by country and see if, you know, it's acceptable. And so, you know, our plan is to launch it. We launched it into Europe. We launched it into Canada, and we're looking at other places, but, you know, it's going to take some work.
So I want to talk about, I want to go into, because I have this whole list of things, these questions I have, because this, again, what's nice is you and I talked about like getting together every 3 months because, first of all, we have to because the enhancements in IAB, this is good for me, by the way. Folks, listeners, I use Interactive Brokers a lot, so this is like really good for me. I'm being selfish here for a second here because I get to learn, yes, I do sharpen the saw. Yes, I do read the instructions, but this is another kind of humongous cheat sheet for me in my business to actually have the ability to go through a lot of this stuff, right? Like, you know, all the forecast contracts or whether it's the options or whether it's the trading mechanism. So let's talk about the enhanced advisor portal. Let's just get totally selfish here. Yeah. So there's a lot of things you've been adding there. Like you have a CRM, a mini CRM in there, I'll call it. You have other things like the trading, which is allocation is automatic allocation. I'm going to just correct that point, which is unbelievable. Group-based automatic allocation. Tax loss harvesting.
Rebalancing?
Yes. Rebalancing. That's what I taught about. That's the one I use like all the time, which is okay, for advisors where you have, let's just say you had a group of, I'm just going to take a number. It doesn't matter the number. 25 clients in this strategy, 25 in that strategy, and 25 in that strategy. There's three different things you're doing. I don't know what you're doing, but you're doing something different, right? One's a tech strategy, one's a health, or basket. One's a healthcare basket, one's a tech basket. You push a button, you say, I want 5% of this stock, 3%, 2%, 1%, bing, 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 done. That's it. Seriously, it's done. Which is, and it's that fast too. I'm not even kidding. And the setup is easy. And I should probably let you talk about this, but I know a lot about this because we do this like regularly. But the cool thing that a lot of people I think are using these days, which is really neat, is the AI commentary generator, which an advisor, and I'll let you take it from here, but basically an advisor could utilize this as a client update and newsletter tool to a degree, right?
That's right. So we have our portfolio analysts, which I think you know about, and you can include within it all kinds of nice PDFs on performance for your clients. And we used to have, well, we still have the ability for, you know, you want to present this to your clients to go in and type in a summary for them, let's say every quarter of how their portfolio is doing. So rather than you having to read through all the charts and the packages and write that summary, we now offer this AI tool that looks at all the graphs and charts and data and suggest a summary for you, which you can edit and change. But I think it's a good place to start for you. And I've heard very good things from other advisors about it.
Well, it's nice. It also can, you can do a commentary about your positions. Like, for example, this one has been performing better, less this, you have an over allocation in this, that's this much. And it's really provided this much portfolio return or detraction. And then it gives you comparatives also. So it's a lot of really cool things that are in there. So it basically does like a portfolio review, a very simple yet elegant portfolio review for you, right? So you can look at your portfolio and stare at it all day and say, oh, I think it's working. Oh, that looks good. But then you can get a little bit deeper into it from there, which is really cool.
I think it's amazing. And I think it's a great tool for advisors, you know, to start the writing process, because I think communication with the client, and you would know more about this than me, is probably one of the most important, you know, jobs you have.
Yeah, we actually write clients almost every day. So this kind of information is, as with a click of a button, it takes, I don't know, you know, 30 seconds to pull up, is very helpful to allow for that. Now, advisors that do not have a regular regiment to talk with their clients, you know, we have the podcast, we have things that we write, we have private blogs for certain strategies. This is a no-brainer, because what you could do is really, and there's no cost, by the way, just to let you all know, but what you do is you can actually communicate and look like it's coming right from you on a regular basis, let's say monthly, and just send out an email with this information, with attachments if you want or not, but this will generate it for you, then take it and, you know, maybe make it your own a little bit more. But this is good stuff that is there to enhance your business. And why does IB do it? I'm going to tell you, and Steve will agree, because the more you have in the business, the more clients you have, it's better for them.
That's exactly right. And the best part of it is you can ignore it if you want, if your client's portfolio is tanking through the floor.
Right? Sorry, do what you want with it. Let's talk about something really cool that I think is very recent, like as in really, really recent. You're upping, and I guess I think I know how you do this, but I want to ask you how to do it. You're upping your FDIC backing and coverage on individual accounts or institutional accounts on the free cash balances. In other words, the money market or the cash balances, cash sweep, to $5 million individually, and joint accounts are eligible for $10 million. So I'm assuming, and then I'm going to let you take it from here and give me the full inside here. What you're doing is you have some kind of package deal that you package up the and back it with, because FDIC is only, what, $500,000 per account, right?
No, actually, we work with a service that takes the money and divides it up amongst a lot of banks.
Oh, so you get the cumulative total of all of it.
You get the cumulative total. So, you know, you put it into 10 banks, it's 10 times 500,000.
So you split it up, and then that, I don't want to say the word leverage as in leverage, but you leverage the FDIC that way, or however you want to look at it. The point is that it's still spread, but not just with one bank.
That's right.
So you have 10 banks, let's just say, and you can effectively do that for every single one of your clients without any, it just works just like that, I guess, right?
Yes. Huh. Yes. Yes.
Who else does that? Because I don't know anybody doing that kind of, those are big numbers.
I think, brother, these are providers that are out there that made relationships with lots and lots of banks. In fact, it's more than 10. And I think there may be some others. I just don't know specifically which others.
But you're still paying interest. I'm assuming that this is probably a small cost item.
We still pay the same interest. All we're doing is taking your money and putting it into a bank for that, for the FDIC insurance.
That's pretty interesting, because if you look at some of the other cash balances, the cash sweep at other brokerages, there is no FDIC, just as an FYI. It's the full faith.
It's the regular SIPC.
SIPC and full faith and credit of insert your brokerage name
of the broker.
Which, by the way, also doesn't pay you snot.
Well, keep in mind that that's a really important point. You should know the financials of your broker, because it is possible for them to go out of business, and the SIPC coverage may not cover your balance. You know, we certainly have a very, very strong balance sheet, and we pride our financials and our stability and everything else. But certainly, as a client, I would look at the broker that you're using from a financial point of view.
Yep. Now, crypto. You were one of the, I don't want to say the first, but one of the definitely leading firms in the area of crypto. And you just added a whole bunch more. You bought things, Chainlink, Avalanche, Solana, Litecoin, Bitcoin Cash, Dogecoin, Cardano, Ripple. So actually Ripple, that was interesting, because Ripple got a major court ruling in their favor, right? Not too long ago, which was fascinating. Actually, it seems like a lot of the crypto, Binance last week or last month got a ruling. The SEC got them off their back, at least temporarily. But this is something that's really interesting, because can you explain how it's traded and the whole, when we weave in the options, stocks, mutual funds, all in one account concept?
Yeah. So, we may be different than some of the other crypto providers in that, they court actively trading people that want to only trade crypto. We view it as a piece of everyone's portfolio, that if they want to diversify, they can buy some crypto. But certainly, we are not marketing ourselves as a crypto broker. We do this because we offer all asset classes, including gold, which seems to be more popular in these times, and bonds. So for the crypto, we work with third-party custodians as partners where we keep this. There's obviously very different regulation for crypto than there is for a brokerage, because brokerage products are regulated by national regulation across the whole U.S. And with crypto, it's regulated on a state-by-state basis.
Right.
And certainly, if we want to offer it to people overseas, such as the UK, we have to go in country by country and get approval for it. So it's more complex than traditional broker products, but we include it side by side and it's seamless to the client, and they can have their crypto holding along with their gold, bonds, stocks, options, and futures.
And the tools that you have for reporting, where you could do flex reporting, or you could actually build, I don't know if a lot of people know this, but if I go into ABC brokerage and I want a client report of their holdings and maybe a monthly report, the month report, I get a choice of one report. You guys have something called flex reports. You have all these different reports that you can technically build a report based on what columns based information, what I want to see, right? That's on the fly.
That's correct. And it was so many years ago. And in fact, I was involved in putting that in place that, sometimes I forget it. But yes, you can get the data you want and the format you want, and you can play with it any way you want, which to me is very important.
Yeah, because you could say I want this period of time. I want a comparison against this benchmark, let's say, or something. I want to have my rate of return, capital gains, capital losses, this and that. In other words, you can build a report and you can build five of them, save them. And then say, okay, I want, what do you want? I want the capital gains loss report for this month. Okay. What else? I'm going to go over to my, and some are a lot of pre-built, by the way. So you could get those anyway.
That's an important point.
Right.
You can pre-build the templates and have it delivered to you every day, every week, every month.
So it's all automated, which is very, very, very cool. And it may be for some people a little above their heads, but it only takes 5 minutes to really figure this out. Really. I mean, it just takes a little time to figure it out. And there's a lot of information, whether you go over to, for example, on the campus, the IBKR campus, which is the educational area, they have things there like, well, this podcast, there's labs, there's information, there's all sorts of things there. How-tos. That's what I was looking for. How-tos. So there's good stuff there.
That's where you go and sharpen your saw.
Sharpening the saw. We got to do that. That's what we're going to, that will be the title for, I'm going to write this down. Sharpening the saw. I'm going to do that. Okay. All right. So the other thing I guess I wanted to look at is with the emerging markets, that has been a big component. Not only to commercial, we'll say ex-US. Why is Interactive Brokers so popular there?
We are popular because of our universal account. The universal account allows you to fund in a myriad of different currencies, including your local currency, and then trade around the world from one account. So if you are a person sitting in Hong Kong, you can fund your accounts with Hong Kong dollars. And when you want to go and buy Google in the US, you can do one of two things. You could convert those Hong Kong dollars to US dollars at the best possible rates, because we get 20 various different fees from banks and we give you the top of the book. And some of them, are the spreads are like half a pip wide or a pip wide.
Mm-hmm.
And you can convert that to US dollars and then buy the Google. And when you're ready to sell, you can convert it back to Hong Kong dollars. Or the other thing you can do is you can take out a margin loan against your Hong Kong dollars, borrowing the USD. Mm. And it's your choice, depending on the FX risk you want to take on.
Hmm. Interesting. I mean, that would make sense why there's...
Right. So lots of clients from around the world, it's so easy. You know, you're sitting in Hong Kong, you deposit your Hong Kong dollars or the UK, your pounds or Canada, Canadian dollars, and you're just up and trading all around the world from a single account. I don't believe anybody else offers that.
Well, plus, if you wanted to say, hey, the dollar is going to be, you know, moving down against the yen, for example. You can convert your cash to yen.
That's exactly right.
Which is the point of currency trade. Well, two points, which is that they have currency trading. One, two, that's all in one account. So now you have a hedge against, let's say you bought, I don't know, you know, a basket of Japanese stocks or something of that nature. Or, you know, you think that the dollar is going to go down. You can actually move out of it into euros or whatever. Pick whatever it is. Or in whatever the particular currency is in Liechtenstein.
That's, well, I believe it's euros.
Zero, yeah, I'm sure it's euro. The Liechtenstein lira. Oh, right. Funny. Steve Sanders, always a pleasure to have you on and give me all the inside scoop on what's happening at Interactive Brokers and what's happening around the world with traders and the latest and greatest innovations in technology when it comes to brokerage and trading. So I appreciate that.
Thank you, Andrew. It's always a pleasure.
Great time. Thanks. That's going to wrap up this show, this episode of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. It's the summer. Get out there and do your thing. Go boating, swimming, vacationing, partying, barbecuing. Spend it with family. But make sure that you tune in each week on Sunday when the show drops for some of the best information that you're going to get on financials. You know, it's been right now we're closing in on an anniversary, which I guess is going to be, 17 years of podcasting. No, 18 years. I'm sorry. I don't even know where my head's at. 18 years of podcasting. So coming up next week, David Gaffin. Then we got John Pugliano. We got Scaramucci coming up also, I mentioned. And the names just keep on riding. We have, let's see, who else I got here? Thomas Thornton. Das is coming back. He's going to be here in July, end of July. That's going to be pretty cool. So I'm pretty excited about that. Thanks for joining me this week and every week. Go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Check out what's going on over there, how we can help you also as a client. Yes, if you have an IRA, a pension, individual accounts, whatever you want to do, whether it's stock trading that we have a special account for and a strategy, whether it's more traditional investing, whether it's high net worth individuals. We have all of that we do right here at Horowitz & Company, downtown Fort Lauderdale, sunny Fort Lauderdale, humid, hot, and a great time of place to be. So, you know, check it all out. Thanks for joining us, and I'll see you again next week. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as a sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida, and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training. Advertisements are not related to the host or affiliates and are not considered recommendations by the host of the show or any affiliates of Horowitz & Company.